This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Oh, we're rolling. It's already been in it. It's already been brought in.
Bring it.
We're back into the success tips.
So, enunciate.
Come on, we gotta hear it.
Jack,
speak what you mean it.
Business success tips. Do you have them or not? That's the question.
There are the haves and the have-nots.
Here's the answer. Yes, you do because you're listening right now.
That's right. So, a couple things that I think the audience might find of interest.
If you want to be heard, you need to
listen. I need, okay. The audience might find of interest. One is that my son, JC, has interestingly taken up reading the classic, as in Emerson and Plato and these kinds of things, which I find sort of unusual. I mean, and this is not totally supplanting CNN and Sportswatch.
I've never watched CNN. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, whatever sports.
ESPN.
Yes, okay. I do watch my share of ESPN.
Right, ESPN. So I thought I would ask JC to share with our listeners, why have you suddenly decided to take up, and what have you learned from people like Emerson and Plato?
It's a very simple answer. I started with reading The Answer, the book, you know, and then I'm like, well, that's a good book. And I'm like, I wonder, let's take it back a little further. So then I studied and I read Napoleon Hill and Dale Carnegie and went to them. I'm like, well, these guys are interesting too. And they have, you know, they got their stuff, you know, from Emerson and like such as that. So then I went back and started reading Emerson. I'm like, this guy's good. And he learned from Plato and such things. So then I'm like, well, let me go back. So I'm just trying to retrace because all these guys learn by reading all these other guys. And if you trace it back, you can read what they read and come to your own conclusions instead of just coming to the conclusions that they came to.
So you're onto stone tablets now?
You know, they're heavy. You know, I have
like
an iTablet. iTablet.
Comes with its own app.
What have been the revelations?
Well, I think he came with an interesting revelation with The Essay on Compensation by Emerson.
Well, the Essay on Compensation by Emerson is really interesting. First of all, like, I've been reading Emerson. Like, I got his, basically his life works, you know, in, like, one big fat book. And I've been reading it every night. And I've pretty much come to the conclusion he's the most brilliant man to have ever lived. Because basically, he just, like, he graduated from Harvard. And then, you know, he had some misfortune, lost his wife, went to Europe, traveled around, studied everything. Like, he is the most learned. You read him, and he's the most learned person I've ever read because he can pull shit out of his ass that you're like, oh, my God. You know, he references everything, you know, from Shakespeare to Plato to anyone you can think of. You know, philosophy, poets, everybody.
He reminds me of Joseph Campbell.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a similar guy.
Just exactly.
Just so knowledgeable.
Knowledgeable.
I mean, who's gone, Joseph Campbell?
But his Essay on Compensation, the main focus is you know, we all live in a world of duality. No one would argue that there's not duality.
There's good and evil, up and
there's
down,
good and
right
evil,
and wrong.
Up and down, you know, it plays in our life all over the place. And yet, especially in America, we have this thought that, oh, there's this finish line. There's this picket fence. There's, I have enough money. My family's happy. The, you know, the field of dreams that we all say. And he says that that is about the worst thing that could ever happen to you because then you're going to be slothful. You're not going to do anything. You know, you kind of become stagnant. If you become stagnant, you start to regress. It's just what happens. So he says the best point in life and what we should all strive for is, you know, adversity. Because adversity makes us all grow. Because when you're happy and things are going smooth and everything's like that, you're not really learning much and you're not really growing much usually. I mean, most people do not strive for more when they have enough. But when people are in struggle, like if you look at history, it's, you know, all the people who ever made it big or did stuff usually came out of poverty or some sort of adversity in their life. They didn't just like, I'm a trust fund kid. I think I'll go get really smart. I think I'll invent something. I think
Go ahead.
No, please.
No, I was going to say it, but that's a sort of a percentage thing because there's a very small percentage of people that grow up with a silver spoon in their mouth. So by definition, most people that end up being something come from that large pool of people that didn't come from anything.
Sort of a little bit anecdote.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity in my life, I did date one rich woman, And we went to the opera.
The one that wouldn't marry you?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, okay.
Stabbing me tonight. Okay.
No, I was just trying to refresh my
memory. That was that one. Yeah, okay. So, but we went to the opera on the Trust Fund Kid Night, right? When you have the Hauses and the Schwabs, all that kind of stuff. And I actually got to meet these people in their booths and, you know, in the opera, whatever. Boring. I mean, that group of people, as a group of people to hang with, it was my minimal experience, were not fun. Now, the people that made it, like they'd started a company and they were driven and they did something, they were really fun.
Of course.
But the people that were given a gazillion dollars in day one, even though they might have gone to the right schools or whatever, they appeared to me very boring. And so maybe it was my naivete, but they talked about their dresses or their jewelry or how much money they spent on this, how much money they spent on that, you know, how big their house was, blah, 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 blah. And I found it incredibly boring. So to sort of back up what JC is saying, I think that when people have come up through whatever adversity, physical adversity, yeah, mental adversity, you know, financial adversity, they tend to grow a lot more than people that didn't have to do that stuff. But
yeah, and my point is that just based on, you know, sheer numbers, the people that are successful today are predominantly going to be people that didn't come from that, you know, elite class, if you will, because that's such a small class. So most people that have made it today didn't come from there.
Well, right? One of the things Napoleon Hill studied was, he says, I mean, one of his things was that the world doesn't give anybody anything. You get what you take, basically. You get what you strive for and go up and grab. Because he, you know, Napoleon Hill was living in, like, kind of the Depression era for part of his life. And, you know, he went down to kind of all the, you know, people living on the streets or, like, hanging out. Basically, they were just hanging out, smoking, you know. The world won't give me a break, people. And he met people with, like, you know, who had gone to Harvard and were from, like, the families of, you know, who landed on Plymouth Rock. Hugely advantaged kid. And they're like, you know, they'd get fired from every job because, you know, they'd go in just expecting, I'm here, you know. I went to the finest schooling and, you know. You know, you owe me a living. Instead of, you know, Napoleon Hill was always deliver more than you know, than your paycheck would say that you should. Mm-hmm. So, you know, always deliver more and, you know, you'll get to where you want to go. But I think people who have achieved a lot coming from advantage have achieved a hell of a lot more than people who came from nothing, because it's harder to achieve from a place of having than to a place of nothing.
Maybe that's why Warren Buffett isn't giving his kids any money. Which is, I find,
right, because you know, and this is a debate my wife and I have had in better days. I won't say we've had it recently, but it was like, you know, wow, the whole idea of, you know, having some success and then raising your children in suburbia with a big house, and you know, they really just aren't in touch with, like, the basic needs. And we're stealing from them because we came from that. Yeah. We didn't come from wealth. We didn't come from, like, you know, I mean, allowance, man. I had to mow, like, the neighbor's yards around the neighborhood on my Saturdays to get any money, or go caddy for 4 hours with two bags on my shoulders. And, you know, and it was tough. And that was, like, that was good, though. It was character building. And to not afford them that experience is stealing from them a possible experience that's going to build character for them.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. Kind of the center row, because as a kid, like, I was in suburbia. I had everything.
You did well.
I had everything I ever wanted, and, like, it was cush, you know. But then, like, when I wanted a car when I was 16, I had to get a job, and I worked at, like, pizzerias and, like, crappy jobs, you know, and I worked a bunch. So that kind of balanced it out. But I would not say I have a strong work ethic, and I'm coming later to life, the value of knowledge and things like that, because, you know, it was easy. I'm not saying I've ever, like, life has always been pretty easy for me, you know? And lately, now that I have a family, like, having to, you know, like, we were tight in our household. But, like, I'm learning a lot and striving for a lot more because I have this need, you know, of I got to, you know, get stuff for my family. And, like, I got to look at, you know, gaining, you know, knowledge and more to, you know, provide better. Yeah. Whereas if I was still cush, I wouldn't be learning shit. I'd be sitting on my couch, you know, hanging out, watching sports, having a good time.
Yeah, there definitely are benefits to adversity. And, you know, we see this in, like, I'm in touch with this because of, like, the fighting scene. Like, I'm a big MMA, mixed martial arts fan. And the fighters who aren't hungry or on top, their biggest fear is that feeling of being on top. Yeah. They think of themselves, they have to trick themselves at being thinking that they're the underdog. Even well, if you look the undisputed at, world yeah. champ, because that's the worst thing that can happen.
But if you look at any sporting events, all the managers or coaches strive for someone to say something on the other team to give them that underdog feel. Yeah. Like have the media diss them or something. Because when you're coming from the underdog, you're way better off. Because like the you're Patriots hungry. Ran into it for a while. Like when they had their dynasty, everyone's like, oh, the Patriots. Oh, you know, this. It was hard as hell to motivate them because everyone, you know, they started reading their press. And it's really hard to have a dynasty because you get into it. Like the Lakers. Like the Lakers at Boston in this current series, you know. Lakers are like kind of like they've already been they're pulling it out at the end, but like for a while they're like, oh, we don't really have to play hard because, you know, we're gonna win this no matter what because right. we're ordained.
We're the Lakers, right?
Yeah, but you know, then Boston got ahead in the series and like, oh shit, we gotta play, you know.
And it gets the fire back in your belly.
Yeah,
and so I think the greatest skill you can have, because this isn't the only way it can go, if you can master the skill of being able to make yourself be hungry and not believe other people's bullshit. That's one of the things yeah. my teacher always told me.
Don't listen to your clinics.
Don't listen. The minute you listen to what other people, when other people are saying great things about you or exalting you, and this has to do with whether, this is a metaphor, right? Whether you're, it means you're rich or people are saying great things about you, is always knock down your own ego and never believe what other people are saying about you, especially when it's really good, because then you can stay hungry. Yeah. I think that you are the true Zen master if you can stay in that state.
Well, and wrapping back around to Emerson, as he says, so like when adversity comes your way, you should be excited. You're like, oh, I'm going to learn a lot. I'm going to grow. I'm going to become a better person because of this. Because when you get to the point in your life when you enjoy the good stuff and you enjoy the bad stuff even more, you can't. I mean, what is going to happen?
That's
you
true
can't. Yeah. I mean, nothing life can throw at you is going to bring you down. Because if you get good stuff, you're like, oh, this is great. I'm getting from, you know, what I've sown. And then if, like, they throw you a, you know, a screwball and, like, all your shit goes, you're like, awesome. I get to start over because I'm going to fucking be better than I ever was before.
I can relate to that. That's kind of what I'm
and it's like, because
right
you look at a lot of people, like, you know, like Napoleon Hill, he failed 4 times, like, before he ever kind of got to where he was. And a lot of that's happened zillions of times with people, you know. You fail 4 or 5 times before you actually get it.
Sure. And when, I think Brian Tracy was the one who said, look, you'll look for the silver lining in every adversity,
yeah.
right?
But so many people, you know, just, I mean, even if we like say, yeah, you know, I'm going to learn from this, they don't really believe it. They're like, oh, fuck adversity, you know.
It's hard to embrace the bitter.
It
when
is.
You're eating bitter, it's hard to embrace it.
It is. And I think, but we all, I mean, it's kind of an American thing that we all think, I mean, in our heart of hearts that I'll make it. I'll get the money, I'll get the house, I'll get the family, and my life will be cool.
Well, I can't think of anybody that thinks of success as striving. I mean, you can't say, I can hardly wait till I have to try harder. It's I can hardly wait till I get enough money that I'm secure.
And I play golf every day.
I play golf, I'm healthy, I have great relationships, I have great kids. And when you look at people's vision of how great, you know, their life is going to be, I can't think of anybody whose vision is loaded with adversity when they think about how cool life is going to be. It's always, when I have my dream home, my dream relationship, my dream car, my dream income, my dream health, it's not, and I'm going to have my dream adversity
is
full of shit. They never say that.
Yeah. Usually the dreaming of things is better than when you actually get them. Because usually it's never as good as you thought it was going to be. It's just the nature of life.
It can be a very, very frightening thing when your dreams come true. Because you better dream really big. Because if you dream a dream and then you achieve it, and then you go, oh, fuck, what's next?
Yeah.
I've had that moment.
Oh,
I've
had
that moment a few times.
You've hit some plateaus.
I've hit some plateaus where I was like, I don't know what to do next. It's scary.
Well, it's funny because in reading Plato, one of the things Plato says is he says it's the job of like the wealthy people who don't have to work in society to achieve excellence. He says, you know, once you've gotten so you're not a wage earner, it's your job to achieve excellence. And I think that's the reoccurring theme through all the people I've read, is they say knowledge is like, you, as long as you're in a pursuit of knowledge and always growing in that respect, you'll achieve in life. Like, the achievement will come in with that ever, you know, thirst for knowledge. Because all these people, I mean, like, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, you know, Abraham Lincoln, all these people, like, evidently, Theodore Roosevelt is supposedly the best read American ever. Like, he'd read 2 books a day. Like, he was, like, super reader guy. But, like, these guys would just strive to know more and more and more. Because I believe knowledge is truly power. Like, the more I get into it, the more I learn, the more I realize that, like, there is something to, you know, education is really it. Because the more you know, the more power you have.
What's interesting thing is, we are, there's no time in history where knowledge has been cheaper and easier to get, right? Ever. In the history of mankind, there's no been any time where you can go to the internet or whatever, basically for free, get any knowledge you want from anybody, anytime, instantaneously. It's way better than the library. So now we have a generation where all knowledge is free.
But there's good, knowledge and there's bad knowledge,
but
right?
But it's totally accessible. You have your choices. Yeah.
I think we can also overwhelm ourselves with shit.
But it's interesting. What do people do with it? I mean, do they hang out and watch, you know, American Idol, or do they read Plato? I mean, what's the reality when all this knowledge is available?
Well, I agree. I mean, for example, one of the things on YouTube is that there's a libertarian economist that Sean and I are both fans of, I think. And he produces these very insightful videos on Peter Schiff providing an economic education to people, and he maybe gets 20,000 views per video, and then, you know, the talking panda, you know, gets 350,000
or the funny baby or the dancing panda or whatever.
But I think there's definitely a place for both of it, because I don't, you know, like I listen to, you know, books on tapes in my car, and then I read when I go to bed. But, like, sometimes in my car, I just turn on music because it's like, you know, you gotta freaking, you can't just always be grinding and grinding and grinding.
No, you need to disconnect.
And I think, like, there, a lot of, you know, educated people have been, you know, very funny, very light, and but still striving for knowledge. And I think there's the happy balance between, you know, say, you know, pop music and Plato. Right. Enjoy them both.
Balance is the key. And I think that to become overwhelmed with, you know, the obsessive quest for knowledge and acquiring knowledge makes you a very unbalanced human being, just as it would if you were playing video games all the
time. Well, and like Socrates said, his whole thing was, you know,
moderation.
Yeah. Everything in moderation.
Was that really, that was a Socratic statement? I didn't know that, actually.
That was kind of his rebellion against Plato, because he was Plato's student, like, from when he was 15 on, and, like...
Socrates would be a better guy to party with, but I definitely got him.
Yeah. No, but it's funny, because, like, I think it's really good, and that's why I see, you know, the study of history so valuable. Because if you go back and, like, the John Azaroffs of the day, or, like, the modern, you know, rah-rah guys, or the modern people, they just read, I mean, they've just studied all this other stuff. And it's better to go back and read it yourself and take your own interpretation,
right.
I found.
Right. Because you're getting a diluted lineage sort of a thought. Because
you're getting their thoughts on
what you're saying is really there are no new ideas.
No. Well, you look at, like right now I'm reading Plato's Republic, you know, where he kind of, you know, has a discourse about what the perfect society would look like, you know. It's not like anything has changed. I think one of the smartest things he says is that the ruling class... or the, you know, the monarchy or the elected officials should not be allowed to own possessions. Because if they are servants to the people, they have no need for personal, like... Because I think that's what fucks up America, is all these guys are like, they have all their own interests in mind.
Oh, absolutely.
They're all like, I'm going to get this for my oil company, I'm going to get this. And they have
and
all
the
their...
corporations exploit that, which
exactly.
is why we're
But if these
up,
were all public servants who could not own property and they were taken care of, they had food, clothing, and shelter, and their families were well taken care of, but they could not own anything if they wanted to, it's a much better way.
Yeah.
Because then they're servants.
Yeah, that's why I voted yes for that proposition on public funding. So they did that experimental thing where, you know, there would be no private money to politicians. Of course, lost.
But
that was the right idea.
I would like to mention, I think we'd be remiss in not mentioning an alternative take on this, which is more of a Buddhist perspective, which is to say, be happy in all moments, and all moments are perfect, right? Rather than striving for anything. Like, so it's like, do not become attached to the good or the bad.
Yeah.
Just accept all moments for exactly what they are and be in the present moment at all times. Just be present. And then don't judge anything. And that's a totally different way of doing this. Then everything we've said in this conversation from the beginning is null and void. Because then it's just, you just accept it.
Yeah.
It's just all right. It's all perfect. You know, and that, I think that's true Zen mastery.
Well, I was watching a PBS special on happiness the other day. And one of the glitches in obtaining stuff is, I guess you'd call it desensitization, is they you know, do this whole thing on what makes people happy and how to be happy and whatever. And it was interesting, people like buying stuff. But the problem with buying stuff is it always goes away. I mean, if you buy a new house, it's really great for the first week, but sooner or later it fades. If you have a new relationship, if you have whatever you have, human nature is for things to fade over time. Yeah. So no matter how much stuff you get, you'll always need more stuff or more whatever, right, because by definition, it fades. Because you can't keep getting, it's like a drug, you can't keep getting enough of it.
Yeah.
So you look at these people who, you know, they build, we have a client who's building, but he's building a $40 million house. I mean, shit, that's a lot of house, right? But then what do you do after a $40 million house? Or what,
you get a second $40 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people are building castles ever since there's been rich people because they're trying to do something.
Yeah,
but every time you get
I feel sorry for that person.
It just it fades, and you gotta do something else.
Yeah, I went to that Castello di Amoroso, whatever it is in Napa. The guy, he built this Tuscan castle, and it's just is it Tuscan? I don't know. Anyway, I don't know what style he used. I think it's Italian castle style. He basically recreated an entire castle in the Napa Valley, and it's a winery. And the wine's like very mediocre and stuff. But anyway, it's just this huge statement. It's just his ego. And the guy is like, at first I thought, oh, this is really neat. Like he did all this stuff and everything. And then you just get in there and you realize this is some vain quest this guy's on for his own. And it reminds me of Milan Kundera's book, Immortality, the things we do to try to build immortality in mankind. And at some point it's like, it really seems sad to me. Yeah. Because I think that the key to, when you're talking about happiness, the key to happiness is to be able to feel happy about where you are and what you have. And that if you're always needing to push the envelope and have more, you are cursed. You will never be happy.
Also,
well, there's a saying, if you need more, you'll never have enough.
I think the greatest thing we can acquire in this life is perspective. And like, how you, because if you think about it, all we ever do is look out of your, like, all you have is looking out of these eyes in your head, you know? So how you perceive the outside world is the important part, not what it is.
Right, it's your perception.
If you can perceive, you know, sit in a, you know, a grassy field and see this as beautiful as any castle, then you've won over the guy who has to build a fucking castle, you know? It's like...
There's not a universal bar.
It's not like if you're really rich, you get outside of your head and get to experience things from outside of your body, you know?
Right.
It's like, no matter what, if you're rich or poor, you're here. Yeah. And I remember, like, you know, like St. Thomas, they freaking locked him up in a...
Aquinas?
St. Thomas of Aquinas, I think.
Yeah.
During the, whatever those were. Anyway, he was on the wrong side. They locked him in a closet that he couldn't stand up with, and he couldn't lay, you know, it was just too small for him. And basically, you know, he withered away for like 2 years, you know, with... just to, you know, like, in his feces, and, you know, they threw his food on his, you know, feces. It was awful. And he was blissed out, because he was seeing things through, you know, a God-enlightened mind, so to speak. So everything was beautiful, and they got really pissed off. And then one day, he just disappeared and got out, because he was done with that, you know? Because he could have gotten out any time, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, it goes to the power of perception. Like, I would rather have how he looked at the world over anything. Because, hell, if you could get, you know, enjoy that, I mean, what more do you want in life?
There was a famous story about the Dalai Lama, who, when he was in captivity by the Chinese government, and they asked him later, what was your biggest fear during your captivity? And he said, losing compassion for my captors.
Yeah.
That was his biggest fear, that he would lose compassion.
Well, back to the happiness thing, a couple of things were interesting. At least one guy studied... all these Vietnam war vets that were in prison, right? And they went through, obviously, torture and all this kind of stuff. And they asked these guys who went through the torture, and it was horrible torture, if you had your life to live over again, would you eliminate the torture? And every one of them said no.
Really?
Every one of them said no. Because it's weird as a scene that said it gave them a perspective. And this is after they got tortured and it came out. They couldn't have had any other way. And, I mean, some of these guys are amazing guys. And they went through, and they, I was shocked.
They wouldn't want to go through it a second time.
They wouldn't go through it a second time, but they wouldn't want to erase it from their mind.
But I mean, who doesn't feel like that about the shit that's happening in your life?
No, but
I think, I mean, anyone can look at their life, no matter who you are, and everyone can look at all the, you know, the worst things that ever happened to you or what you grew out of the most.
Yeah.
Whether it was a girl breaking up with you or whether it was, you know, a devastating business loss. Everybody's had a bunch of things go wrong in their life, and that's what they've grown most out of usually. I mean, most people will say, yeah, you know.
Another interesting thing out of PBS special, they found after interviewing all these people, the older people got, the happier they were, which I found very interesting.
But my mother's in her late 70s. She said she's never been happier.
Yeah.
And they did that across the board. The older people got, the happier they got, which I thought is an amazing statistic.
I like that. That gives me hope.
Yeah.
I like that. Because I fear aging. I don't want to age.
Well, I think
I have to say, I'm very Peter fucking Pan.
Well, you know, my mother, who, again, is in her late 70s, said to me the other day, we were just talking philosophically, and, you know, I hit 50 a year ago, and she said, you know, the good thing about 50 is by 50, you figured most of it out.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, good point, because, you know, the older you get, the more you kind of figured it all out. You haven't figured it out 100%, but you figured a lot more out at 50 than you have at 30.
I feel like each year that goes by, it's like I'm a little bit more on top of the shit. Even when I'm going through it, I just have this vision from above myself that just gets higher and higher, where I'm going through it, but I'm also seeing it from a perspective that lets me steer the car a little bit more than just being the car.
When you look at your history, I mean, being a teenager really sucked. It had some moments, but when I think about, was I happy as a teenager? Crap, no. I mean, some good points and bad points, and then I think of the relationships I've gone through, and, you know, the trauma, and the, you know, thinking about killing yourself, all this crap. I'm way more stable now at 60 and actually happier than I was at 30 or 40, because there's a lot of stuff going on, ups, the downs, all this stuff. And it's interesting. You'd think as you got older, you wouldn't be as happy and you'd worry about immortality, but that is what happens.
Well, that's, again, like I said, that gives us something to look for. So we're out of time on this episode. So thank you all. We didn't talk about any technology whatsoever on this episode.
Thank God.
On purpose. But we did not talk about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as promised. So I think next time. Not on this episode.
Oh, no.
Not on this episode. Next time.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
And there it is, another episode of Business Success Tips. Thanks as always for joining us. You can check out our website online at businesssuccesstips.org. Send us an email at friends@businesssuccesstips.org. Or if you're a Twitter stalker, find us at twitter.com/BSTpodcast. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.
Hey, this is Sean Daly, host of Green Talk Radio. Green Talk helps you navigate the maze of green and eco products on the market today and make smarter lifestyle choices at home and at work through informative and entertaining interviews with industry authors and experts, as well as executives from innovative companies around the world. Find Green Talk Radio on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. Green Talk Radio, environmental stewardship through smart consumption.